But now we go to Amanda out of Montreal via CKUT.
And I just wanted to announce for next week, we have a couple of things in line. One is a book review, which was actually scheduled for this week, but has been put off to next week. It's Chinua Achebe's latest novel on the Biafran War. Doug, do you remember offhand what the title of the book is?
There Was a Country.
There Was a Country. So Doug and David are going to be taking a look at that next week. And then we're also really happy to announce that the former editor-in-chief of Pambazuka News, Feroz Manji, is going to become a regular contributor here at Amandla. We met with him right before the show, and he will be coming in with probably a monthly column, his thoughts. It'll either be interviews or a roundup of news across the continent, something thematic. Whatever it is, Feroz is always fascinating, entertaining, and sometimes even poetic. So I think it'll be a wonderful...
It's quite exciting. Yeah. The ideas he's got, so we could be having some fun over the next while.
Yeah,
with him.
Very nice new member of the show. We shift our focus to the small West African country of Sierra Leone. Had elections 2 weeks ago. The incumbent, President Ernest Bai Koroma, was re-elected with 59% of the vote, which means that there was no need for a runoff election. The turnout was spectacular at 87.3%, which should turn most Canadians green with envy. It's a very, very impressive level of participation in what was not just national elections, but also local elections. So, those are the numbers. Elections are important, but it's in the context of a country that is grappling with extreme poverty and post-war reconstruction. A lot of challenges going on there. So we have on the line now with us Ismail Rashid, who is a professor of history at Vassar College. He's also an activist, a political commentator, and I do need to very proudly point out a former contributor to Amandla. Rashid, welcome back to Amandla.
Thank you very much, Gwen. I'm glad to be back on the air with Amandla.
Good. So as I was saying, your country just went through elections that not only elected a president, but parliamentarians, municipal councillors, mayors. It was a big day in the country, and by all accounts, it was a peaceful and fair process. So is it? Can we start on a positive note that this was a wonderful accomplishment?
Yeah, it's significant, and it's a significant election for the country in several ways. Since the conclusion of the war in 2001, this is actually the first election that was organized and almost fully funded by Sierra Leoneans. Second, from all indications from observers, from media reports, of violent incidences, either near polling stations or in any parts of the country. So the elections passed peacefully. The day of the elections was peaceful. The numbers that you gave at the beginning of the program, that it had a very high participation from Sierra Leone, was also very encouraging. So all in all, this is an election that put the country in much more positive light than the war 10 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Very nice. Okay, so now let's take a look at what all of this actually means in terms of the outcome of the elections. From what I understand, there were 10 parties vying for power. There were 9 candidates vying for the presidency. But what really is the political landscape? What kind of choice were Sierra Leoneans offered this time around, if any?
Okay, two ways to look at it. I mean, the first is it was an election that drew 10 political parties, including, surprise, surprise, the former Revolutionary United Front Party. You remember the movement that was largely responsible for most of the violence in Sierra Leone. Well, they are now officially a political party in Sierra Leone. And they participated in the elections, and they were one of 10 different political parties that fielded presidential candidates and fielded officials for local government as well as parliament. So it was a relatively broad field. But the elections in reality was between 2 political parties. None of the other 8 parties were able to make more than the 1% threshold. So it became a straight fight between Sierra Leone's 2 oldest parties, the Sierra Leone People's Party, which was a party that was founded founded around 1949, and the All People's Congress, which was a party that was founded in 1962. So we were looking at elections between two groups of that have been there for a very long period of time. So it made choice for people a lot more simpler. The other parties were not competitive because a lot of reasons. They were not well organized. They did not have the resources. These were the two parties with the most resources. So it made the choice at one particular level relatively simple for people.
But was there a substantive choice in terms of the two platforms of these parties? What distinguished one from the other?
Exactly. So this is the point that I wanted to go into in terms of thinking, was there really a major and significant choice between the two parties? Well, the opposition party, the party that actually lost the election, the SLPP, complained and is still complaining that there was not a level playing field, that the ruling APC party outmaneuvered it by using state resources, by using the power of incumbency, and they even claimed, and they're probably going to go to court, that the elections in some parts of the country were not conducted fairly.
Is there any substance to that claim?
No, I mean, from what observers have been saying, that the All People's Congress Party was going to win anyway. If there's any dispute, it's probably going to be in the margin of the win, not whether or not it would win. The first thing is, it wasn't a level playing field. So rightly, it meant that other parties did not have the opportunity to compete fairly. The second point that you mentioned about political platform. Well, the two political parties did not offer that much difference in terms of political platforms. I don't think they offered visions to Sierra Leoneans that were very attractive. What happened at the end of the day was that people looked at the records of the two parties, and just as our recently concluded elections in the United States chose in people's imagination what they called less of two evils.
Mm-hmm.
They felt that the APC party had done some very interesting things, like the construction of roads, like the creation of a new policy in which young women, young kids get to go to hospitals for free. So they've done things from the perspective of people which seemed very encouraging. While they felt that the APC did not present, the SLPP, the opposition party, did not present an attractive candidate. The candidate that it presented was Mada Bio, one of the members of the military junta who was there 12 years ago. So I think that turned people off. So the victory did not come out of the fact that we have the great progressive party who inspired or is going to move people forward. But what people decided was that the president who won the elections was a better bet than the former military leader.
Okay. All right. So speaking of the, so President Karoma, who was reelected in his last term, boy, he really threw open the door to foreign investment, massive presence of foreign mining companies in particular. So there's this huge resource boom going on in your country right now, massive infrastructural development going on in Sierra Leone right now. And the narrative seems to be very much this kind of cheerleading. This is the road to progress and this is the recipe for success. In a country where the vast majority are really contending with grinding poverty, but they're promising that the returns are really going to be over the course of this mandate as the infrastructure is put in place, that average Sierra Leoneans are going to start to benefit from this. What's your take on that?
Well, as you said, I mean, this is the picture that he painted, and this was largely the picture that uplifted Karoma to power. But underneath this sort of glossy story, there are a lot of concerns. People are concerned about loss of land, especially to companies that are engaged in bio industry, a lot of land, especially in Northern and Southern Sierra Leone, is being alienated into foreign countries. Mm-hmm. Second is even though mining is adding revenue into government coffers, people have not seen whether you want to call it trickle-down effect or substantial change in their living conditions. So for the majority of Sierra Leoneans, life has not changed very much. In fact, during my last visit to Sierra Leone in June, July, money was very tight. There wasn't very much happening in the economy, although there seemed to be a lot of activity. So people are complaining about labor, so the kind of labor regimes that you have, pay, and sort of the treatment of some of these foreign companies or local workers. So underneath this story, there's a lot of sort of local resentment, and this is not a Sierra Leonean story alone, as you know. This is the story of sort of this boom that's going on in different parts of Africa. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of investment, there's a lot of money, there's a lot of sort of good news story, but underneath them, there's a lot of social resentment in terms of how people perceive how they're being treated, people's perception also of resources being taken out of the continent without much being sort of invested locally. Yes, people are seeing sort of the construction of infrastructure projects. There are these big projects going on, but people are still very worried about how much impact that's actually having on their lives, how much it's actually transforming their lives.
Right. So among the eight other political parties who did not manage to get their acts together in time to be organized enough to be real contenders, were any of them speaking to these concerns and issues?
Not really. I mean, so one of the disappointing thing about the Sierra Leone election was that you have a lot of sort of real issues that the party could have organized around, mm-hmm. and have sort of spoken to. As you said, there's the issue of employment, there's the issue of education, which is a huge issue in Sierra Leone. There's the issue of health. When we last spoke, we talked about sort of the cholera
outbreak in Freetown.
In Freetown that was going on. So there is real issues that these political parties could have spoken to people, organized people around, but none of the parties were able to do that effectively. Mm-hmm. In the end, it became mostly sort of a politics of personality and sort of a politics of what in Sierra Leone is called regional strongholds, which is a north, west, south, east divide in the country. So most of the people in north and west of Sierra Leone went for the ruling APC party. Mm-hmm. Most of the people in the southern, eastern portion of the country went for the SLPP party. Some of it has ethnic undertones, but I think I don't want to simplify it. Simply that the elections in Sierra Leone being a question of just ethnicity or a question of tribalism as outside observers like to see. I think that the parties, especially the opposition party, were not able to effectively sort of raise serious issues that Sierra Leoneans are concerned about and mobilize Sierra Leoneans around that to vote for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that sort of prompts my last question here, which is the whole issue of youth in Sierra Leone, which I know is a major concern of yours and a focus of your work. 73% of the population in Sierra Leone is under the age of 35, and 70% of them are either under or unaged. So it would seem that with those numbers, given the high participation rate, we're actually talking about a lot of young people who participated in this election. So what do you think got them to the polling stations?
Hope. And expectations that if coal mines given another opportunity, that things would get better for them, which is a challenge and an opportunity to the Koroma government to make good in their second term. On the flip side, we as Sierra Leoneans also need to be very worried because sometimes what tends to happen is bad things happen not when people are really despondent, but bad things happen when people's aspirations are really up and arising. So we're in a situation where the vote shows a lot of enthusiasm, shows that a lot of people want things to change. Mm-hmm. What I'm worried about, if those things don't change and they don't change very quickly, in other words, within this short window that Chroma has been given is that we might go once more into an area of sort of social discontent.
Yeah. Well, he certainly actively courted them during the election campaign. Does he have anything concrete to offer them, both in terms of promises that he made during the election campaign, but concretely, does he have something that will kind of mobilize them and give them something?
Well, the APC and also the opposition SLP spoke a lot about increasing youth employment, which is generic, which is something that I've been said in the country again and again. What is missing is specific. What kind of specific programs are they going to sort of implement to get young people employed, to get young people educated? I mean, young people have already bought into the system. That level of participation shows that they're invested in the political system. So I don't think we have a problem of youth alienation from politics. What we have a problem of is the extent to which government, especially the Chroma government, is going to develop meaningful, substantial programs, educational programs, as well as employment programs and cultural programs that target and speak to really the optimism, the aspirations among the young people, which has been fairly evident in the electoral process.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so here really is my last question, because we do have a couple more minutes. Have you seen in your work and in your recent visit to Sierra Leone a move by youth to take matters into their own hands, in the sense that, yes, they participated massively in the elections, which is great, although it seems that they're going to be sold short in terms of any real, anything real coming back to them? Are you seeing signs of youth initiatives where they're, to the best of their ability, creating their own employment, coming up with alternatives that are beyond electoral politics that could bring real change in their lives, developing critical think tanks about where the country's going, anything like that?
Yes, I think, again, the last time we spoke, we talked about this, that young people are showing a lot of initiative in Sierra Leone. They're into transportation, they're into small business, and they're doing a lot of things on their own. In fact, part of what the election reflects is not only young people wanting government to stuff for them, but also wanting to make sure that their interests are invested in politics, because whether or not they're driving cars, whether or not they're selling on the street, whether or not they're in transportation business or in entertainment business, I think young people are really interested that they want to defend politically, and their participation in politics is partly a defense of those particular interest. So government has to do two things. It's to respond to those who really need support, need help, need an environment, to become fully functional citizens, and also to respond to those who have taken on initiative to do stuff but also want an improvement in the environment, so that whatever they're engaging is fruitful and it's sort of rewarded.
Okay, Rashid, thank you so much for joining us, and no doubt we'll be speaking again soon.
Okay, thank you very much for having me on the Mandla.
Take care.
Take care.
Approchez, approchez, mesdames et messieurs. Dessonnez ce joli mot que l'on appelle indépendance. Laissez-vous emporter par la consonance du mot liberté. Écoutez les sonnets. Car pour sonner, ils sonneront, mais ils resteront des mots. Écoutez sonner le glas de nos indépendants. 50 ans d'incompétence sans autre conséquence que de faire croire aux abrutis que le moment est venu de festoyer d'abord et de réfléchir ensuite. Depuis lors ça continue malgré les déficits. Si les cons savaient voler, ils seraient sur sa télé. Ce sont les mêmes qui commémorent, qui battent tous les records dans le pas du classement des indices de développement. Premier à monter au créneau dès qu'il s'agit de réconfort, sans jamais avoir à fournir le moindre effort. Car s'ils pensaient travailler, ils n'auraient pas le culot de fêter quelque chose qui leur a été octroyé. Vous leur voulez l'indépendance, disait le général. Alors ils nous l'ont donné, c'est depuis lors que l'on danse sans pouvoir s'arrêter. On fait quoi? 50 ponts? 50 routes? Ou 50 ponts?
50 ans d'indépendance.
Ça alors?
50 canards.
Tu veux dire de dépendance? Et la France? Et qu'on sort? Elle s'en sort? Elle est d'accord?
Elle garantit son assistance.
Arrête ça, qui te l'a dit?
Monsieur Sarkozy.
Silence, il y a Sarkozy qui parle. Il dit dans une de ses déclarations que la France économiquement n'a pas besoin de la...
Bonsoir et merci d'avoir été à l'écoute. Merci à toute l'écoute.
You know, last week, in fact, I'm going to start with a confession. Most of us old atheists aren't used to confessing, but I'm going to do a confession. I must be the worst journalist in the world, because last Wednesday night, I beseeched all of you to get out there and put pressure on our Canadian government to pass Bill C-398, the Canadian amendment for the medical reform there, to get cheap drugs out. Oh, sorry, Canadian access to medicines regime, to get cheap generic drugs out to Africa to help us win the battle against HIV/AIDS. And I said, get out there, sign the grandmother's form and petition and go to all the other networks that are out there. Little did I know, that's why I'm confessing to be the worst journalist in the world, little did I know that very evening as we spoke, the Conservative government defeated the bill. It was over, done with, it will not come back, ladies and gentlemen, until we kill this government. We must drive the stake through their heart. It's the only way to get rid of these vampires. They are so bad. Now, that bill had everybody's support. There was like, the drug company said, it's okay. The Association of Canadian Drug Companies said, go right ahead. We have no problem with it. As long as Canadian manufacturers sell their cheap generic knockoffs to places like Rwanda and Malawi, that's fine. So no problem, they said, go ahead. And those are the companies. That organization represents all the biggest drug companies in the world. And the Globe and Mail came out with a huge editorial saying a bill to save lives and relieve poverty. It's a win-win situation. And there is our Canadian government, pedantic, ideologically driven, just so narrow-minded and focused, fundamentalist capitalist.
To stick with your religious analogy here, yeah, it's basically more Catholic than the Pope.
More Catholic than the Pope, just take a look at what's happened over the last 2 weeks in the Middle East. It is so evident there with the whole Israeli-Palestine thing. Palestine goes and the word state is added to their status. Just the word state, that's all it is. It's a word. It means absolutely nothing.
Following a legitimate process that is acknowledged the world over, they have a right to put in the request.
Nations of the world, it was acknowledged. And then Canada, one of the nine oppositions. But even worse than that, Canada, the only one of the nine opposition to go back and announce it. Even the United States didn't announce it.
And threatened to punish the Palestinians for it.
And they brought their ambassadors home and all of that. Oh, it was. So just that as an example of their ideological bent. And it comes out of fundamentalism. It comes out of religious fundamentalism. Once you have been converted, once you have seen Christ, once you have been touched by the Son of God, then everything you do is okay. Whether it's bad or not, that it allows you to go off and slay your demons and kill your enemies. Do anything it takes. You are okay because you have seen the light. Well, that's what they're doing now all over the world. And with this generic drug thing, to turn it down when it had all the support of a multi-party opposition in parliament, when the drug companies themselves, the Globe and Mail, the media of capitalist Canada said, yes, it's a win-win, go for it. And the government turns it down. We are talking about fundamentalism of a basic order that I think is affecting foreign policy at many, many levels.
Yes, it is. And so one of the ones that we're dealing with now most immediately in Canada is the whole shift in policy around international development assistance overseas. We have never been cheerleaders for Canadian foreign policy, and certainly Canadian international development has been problematic all along. But there's this new direction that it's taken.
Oh, it's
that is particularly disturbing, and that is very much pairing up foreign aid with the private sector and actually using corporations as the drivers for development around the world. And boy, it has a lot of people really concerned.
Well, in a sense, I'm one to say this is actually a very healthy development. Past governments under the likes of Paul Martin and Pierre Trudeau and Brian Mulroney
denied this reality.
They denied this is what was happening.
I agree.
But they were the ones who put international affairs and international commerce and trade with foreign
with
affairs.
Yeah.
It wasn't this government that did that, and so in a sense, it's a little more on the table.
If we're talking class war,
they've clarified the playing field,
gotten rid of the hypocrisy.
Oh yeah.
But in concrete terms, and we're going to look at it in more detail next week, but because we have to get on to other things. But just in concrete terms,
can I vent for a little while? I'm so upset. It's okay.
So, but let's to bring listeners up to speed who haven't been following this story, basically what CEDA, the Canadian International Development Agency, what it's going to be doing at this point is pairing up with, in particular, Canadian mining companies to deliver development assistance, which at just its most basic level, given the track record of Canadian mining companies around the world, whether it's Latin America or Africa or elsewhere, has been absolutely abysmal. It's a track record that has been marked by human rights abuses, environmental devastation, corruption. So to see our government placing in the hands of these corporations the responsibility for poverty alleviation, respect for human rights, it's Orwellian.
It exasperates us so much. And part of that exasperation is related to our dear, dear comrade Tamara Herman, who has just been through Africa exploring the impact of Canadian mining interests in several countries of Southern Africa, Malawi, Tanzania, Zambia, and Zimbabwe, and is putting together a documentary film that shows exactly the connection between Canadian mining interests and the impact they have on the ground. And our Canadian government is going to now put forward a front for those very same companies, abuses and pollution, labor rights abuse, environmental abuse, and they're going to put forward a policy that says, oh, our companies are bringing development, and so our NGOs will support them to make them look good.
Yeah, and another dimension to this is that really what we're talking about is Canadian taxpayer money going to subsidize
the corporate,
corporate interests overseas. And
the profits of some of the richest companies in the world.
Yeah, it's amazing. So we're hoping that next week we'll have Jerry Kaplan on. He's a wonderful thinker, a columnist for the Globe and Mail and many other publications. We've had him on the show a couple of times, and he always has very succinct and enlightening things to say about this, and he's just absolutely on the warpath on this issue. So we're hoping to bring him into the studio next week to take a look at this, but we need to move on tonight, so we'll just take a little musical break and we'll be right back.
I'm taking a deep breath.
Are you saying we are wrong?
You are listening to Saturday Morning Live. This is Radio Regent, and that was Amandla out of CKUT with Doug Miller and Gwen Shulman.